The Lord be with you. We want to be in the spotlight, but Jesus gives us a spot to be light. And to explain what I mean by that, I want to talk to you about the one time I made a varsity sports team. I was on the McLaughlin High School varsity swim team. And what you need to know about that, because my father is shocked at this moment by hearing this. So what you need to know is a few things. First of all, Mack High did not have a pool, and our swim team never went to a single meet, and we never had a single practice. That said, we did have matching t-shirts, and we did get let out of class early for events. Now, today we heard Jesus say in Matthew chapter 5, that he's not come to abolish the law but to fulfill it, and that heaven and earth will pass away before a single letter of God's law does, and that anyone who breaks the law and teaches others to do the same will be least in the kingdom of heaven, which sounds like real bad news for someone who was on a fake swim team. But I want to point out that a few chapters later in Matthew 12, Jesus himself gets accused of breaking the commandment to honor the Sabbath, and teaching others to break it as well. This happens when he heals a man with a withered hand on the Sabbath, and when he instructs his disciples to gather grain, which is harvesting, so they can have something to eat on the Sabbath. And it brings out this question, what does it mean to fulfill the law? Because here's the thing, by the letter of the law, I was on a completely valid swim team. Mack High, by the definitions of Mack High, to have a sports team, all you needed to do was have a teacher who would sign off to be the coach. And our biology teacher said, sure, I'll sign off to be the coach of this swim team, knowing that we would never swim. And all you needed to have a valid excuse to get out of class early for your sports team was the teacher to fill out a form. Our teacher filled out the form, and we went and got milkshakes. By the letter of the law, I was a valid member of the varsity swim team. And at the same time, in the 1968 Olympics, Tommy Smith, an American Olympian, set the world record for the 200-meter race, and another American, John Carlos, got bronze in the 200-meter race, and they were both disqualified and expelled from the Olympic Games. They were expelled because when they received their medals, they silently raised their fists to draw attention to the oppression of people of color in the United States and around the world. Keep in mind, this is 1968, the year MLK was assassinated. The Olympics is supposed to be non-political. And so when they did this, the director of the Olympics described their action as a deliberate and violent breach of the fundamental principles of Olympic spirit. According to the law, the fastest man in the world was not a valid Olympian, but I, who have never swum competitively in my life, am a valid varsity swim team member. So what does it mean to fulfill the letter of the law? Jesus says that in order to enter the kingdom of heaven, we have to have our righteousness exceed that of the Pharisees and the scribes. And if our righteousness is fulfilling the letter of the law, there is no way we can exceed that of the Pharisees and the scribes because they followed the law to the letter. In the same way that no one at Mack High was a better member of the swim team than I was, because I never lost a match. Yeah? But it's not a coincidence that right before Jesus talks about fulfilling the law, Jesus talks about being salt and light, because salt and light don't exist for themselves. We want salt at our dinner table, but no one sits down to have a big old dinner of just salt, right? The salt is there to add flavor to other food. Your body needs salt so that all your internal organs can function, but if inside your body you have only salt, you will die. Salt can preserve food, but if you sow salt into the earth, it will prevent food from growing. Salt, fundamentally, its saltiness is the transformation of other things. And Jesus says, if salt has lost its saltiness, if it has stopped transforming other things, it is worthless, and you might as well throw it out and trample it underfoot. Similarly with light. Now, light by itself is not nearly as destructive, but it is just as pointless. Jesus said, no one lights a lamp and then covers it up with a basket, because then what's the point of having a light if no one can see it, if it doesn't illuminate anything else? Jesus says, no, you take that lamp and you put it on a lampstand high up so that it gives light to the whole house. Jesus' point is, we exist not simply for ourselves, but for others. And this is why Jesus will go on in Matthew chapter 5 to explain what it means to exceed the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes. He goes on to say, you have heard it said, thou shalt not murder, but I say to you, if you have anger in your heart towards a brother or a sister, you are liable to judgment. And he goes on to say, you have heard it said, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you, if you look with lust at another woman, you have committed adultery in your heart. And he says to you, you have heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, if someone strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other cheek and offer it. And to pray for those who persecute you, to love your enemies. Jesus is telling us that what it means to fulfill God's law is not simply to follow the letter of the law, but to have our heart loving God and neighbor, which is why when Jesus is asked what the greatest commandment is, he says it is this, to love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind, and a second is like it, to love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang the whole of the law and the prophets. Yesterday I talked about how we think of righteousness and justice as two separate things, but in the original Greek, the language of the Gospels, they are the same word, that our relationship with God has to involve our relationship with our neighbor, which is why Martin Luther says, the definition of sin is not doing an action wrong, doing a list of things that you're not supposed to do, it is the state of your heart. When your heart is curved inward, so that it's not open to love of God and neighbor, in that moment you are in a state of sin. And when we think about God's law that way, we can realize that it is possible to use God's law for selfish purposes. If we're only following God's law because our goal is to personally get into heaven ourselves, we're not actually doing it for love of God or love of neighbor. We're just doing it for our own sake, and it is possible to even use God's law in a sinful way, without righteousness. And you have to wonder, is it possible that we do other things that are perhaps inherently good for sinful purposes? Especially today, we can wonder that with sports. Because here's the thing, why do we do sports? Is it so that we can stand on the winner's podium so that we can get a medal or a trophy and a letterman's jacket so we can stand in the spotlight and get all the glory? But friends, if we live our life, even in sports, just for ourselves, in that moment we become barren ground that is salted without transforming anything. We become a light that is hid under a basket without purpose. And so Jesus, he calls us not to stand in the spotlight, but he gives us a spot to be the light. Tommy Smith and John Carlos, they could have basked in the glory of winning their Olympic medals. And Tommy Smith explicitly said that in 1968, the only time when he was considered fully an American, along with everyone else, was when he was the fastest man on the world on that track. And he could have chosen to say, you know what, let this moment just be about me getting the recognition I want personally. But instead, he and John Carlos decided to use that moment that attention the world gave them to shine their light on the suffering of people of color, not just in the United States, but all over the world. And as courageous as that was, I actually want to talk about the third guy in that picture, the white guy, who's not raising his fist. His name is Peter Norman, and he's an Australian. He actually had just set the national record in the 200-meter race for Australia, a record that wouldn't be broken for nearly 50 years. And when the winners, those top three winners, were announced, Tommy Smith and John Carlos went to Peter, and they explained to him what they were going to do, and they asked him, "Do you believe in human rights?" And he said, "Yes." And they said, "Do you believe in God?" And he said, "Yes." And they said, "Okay, well, when we go up there to get our medals, we're going to raise our fists in what was known as the Black Power salute, and we're going to wear on our lapels a badge for the Olympic Project for Human Rights." And Peter Norman thought about this. And here's the thing. This wasn't Peter Norman's fight, right? He's not a person of color. He's not oppressed in this time. And so he could have just said, "Good for you guys, I want no part of this, I'm not going to participate." But what he said instead was, "How can I help?" Because he was a deeply devout person of faith. He was raised in the Salvation Army, and he knew that God shows no partiality, that all are one with Christ, no matter the color of our skin. And in Australia, he had seen firsthand how the law could be used to push down people because of the color of their skin. In Australia, they had laws that made the Aboriginal Australian people second-class citizens, and those laws grieved Peter Norman's heart. And so he said, "What can I do?" And as they chatted more, he realized that it was not his place to raise his fist with them because he personally wasn't oppressed. And as they talked more, they realized they only had two gloves, but also the gloves were not both right-handed gloves. It was one set of gloves, and the Black Power salute is only supposed to be with the right hand. And Peter said, "Well, what if you made it more than just that? What if you raised your left hand, and you have a glove for that, and that way it can just be about solidarity of people of color all around the world?" I said, "Great idea, Peter." And then what Peter did is he went out, he found one of those badges for the Olympic Project for Human Rights, and he put it on. If we bring that picture back, you can see that white badge that all three of them are wearing. And by doing so, Peter made this moment not about him. He stood in solidarity with Tommy and John, but he let himself be salt to bring out their flavor for the world. He let himself be light to shine and illuminate what they were saying for the rest of the world to see. And here's the thing, you know, Peter wasn't expelled from the Olympics, but he did suffer consequences. The next time the Olympics came around, he qualified to be in it, but the Australian team didn't invite him to participate. And in the year 2000, when Australia hosted the Summer Olympics in Sydney, unlike all the other former Olympians whom the Australians invited to be guests, they didn't invite Peter Norman. When Jesus is accused of breaking God's law by healing someone and telling his disciples to gather food so they could eat on the Sabbath, Jesus' response is to remind people that the commandment is to rest on the Sabbath, and to rest, we need to be set free from hunger and pain. And so, though the religious authorities of his day disagreed with him, Jesus fulfilled the law. What does it mean to fulfill the purpose of sports on this day when we have the Super Bowl, when the Winter Olympics are underway? It can't be just to get a trophy or a medal or a letterman's jacket, just to make money for sponsors and bask in the glory of victory. Perhaps sports is about being your best self by working with others. The goal of the Olympics is explicitly to bring together different nations through three virtues: that of excellence, respect, and friendship. And friends, those three men did those three things. In the years to come, when Peter was not invited back to the 2000 Olympics by his own home country, the American U.S. Olympic team said, "Peter, we invite you to be our guest, to stand with us at the Olympics this year." And then when in 2006, Peter died an untimely death, Tommy Smith and John Carlos were his pallbearers. They embodied the purpose of the experience, bridging nations through excellence, respect, and friendship. And I want to say, in defense of my biology teacher who created this fake swim team, that she loved sports. She, in fact, was the tennis coach, and our tennis team was a very real team that practiced hard and won many games. But our biology teacher hated the fact that in our high school, some people wore Letterman jackets and some people didn't, and the people with Letterman jackets acted like they were better than the other students. And so she said, "You know what? If these Letterman jackets are so important, anyone who wants one, they can have them. Sign up for the swim team. You're on varsity now." And what that means is, for the rest of you, you're going to play sports for the right reason, to be your best self and to help other people be better with you. As long, friends, as long as we make God's law about our personal getting into heaven, we turn it into something selfish. We make it sinful. And so Paul says to the Corinthians that he has decided to know nothing among them but Christ and him crucified. And what he means by that is to know that on the cross, Jesus is our righteousness. That on the cross, Jesus fulfills and accomplishes anything that is needed for us to enter into the kingdom of heaven. Jesus does this not because he wants to get rid of God's law, but because he wants to fulfill its purpose, which is for you to love God and neighbor. And you can only do that if you've stopped worrying about yourself. Jesus says that heaven will pass away before one letter of the law passes away, because even in heaven, God's law will stand, because God's law's purpose is love of God and neighbor. And that, my friends, that love of God and neighbor is what the kingdom of heaven is. And so Jesus says, "What is required, I will do for you, that you might choose to do it out of joy, that you might choose to be salt and light, to live not for your own sake, but the way you bring out the flavor of this world, the way you illuminate others in this world, the way you love God and neighbor, and in that way experience the kingdom of heaven now." There was a statue made of that salute a year before Peter Norman died. And at Peter's request, his spot on the winner's podium was left empty. He asked for it to be left empty so that anyone could choose to take their stand there against racism, because it was never about him. Friends, Jesus has put you on the winner's podium, not because you are the fastest or the strongest or the wisest, but because Christ has won the race for you. Friends, you have that spot. So what will you do with your light? May you let your light shine before others so that they see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven. Amen.